Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is April the 1st. Yes, April Fool's Day, 2024. And my guest today is a longtime regular, Dr. Karen Alpert in Australia, where it's the evening. And today we are going to talk a little bit about tax treaties, how they work, the saving clause, with a view to discussing how citizenship interacts with tax residency, the saving clause, and ultimately double taxation. Karen, how are you today?
I'm fine, John. You know, I think April Fool's Day is an appropriate day to be doing this podcast because we're going to be explaining why all these countries have been fools to sign on to a savings clause, right?
Absolutely. They are fools. They are fools. No question about it. I mean, the joke really is on them. I mean, maybe getting to the bottom line, you know, it's really interesting that all these tax treaties say, well, you know, the purpose of the tax treaty is to avoid double taxation. And as we go through this today,
and the response is April Fools.
It's going to be April Fools because through citizenship taxation and the saving clause, what these U.S. tax treaties really are about is to impose double taxation in certain circumstances. Yeah. Would you agree?
But maybe we ought to start at the beginning, John. So what is citizenship taxation and why is it such a problem for Americans?
Well, you know, Karen, it's really interesting. You know, that optical illusion where, you know, one moment you're looking at an old woman and the next moment you're looking at a young woman. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It's
yeah,
an example of where different people can see precisely different things looking at the same image.
Exactly.
But, you know, you use the phrase citizenship taxation, and a lot of people think, wow, you know, that's really patriotic. Everybody doing their good stuff, fair share. And this is the view of generally, I would say, the tax academic community, probably Treasury and people in the tax compliance industry who've never really thought about this, right? Mm-hmm. But here's what it really is, okay? You know, what it really means in effect. As you know, all countries tax their residents anyway. Okay, no big deal there. Whether you're a citizen or not in the U.S., you're going to be taxed if you reside there.
Whether you're there legally or not, doesn't matter.
That's right. That's right. Whether you're, yeah, your immigration status has nothing to do with it at all. You're resident there, you're taxable. And of course, all countries tax income sourced in the country. So what does citizenship taxation mean in the context of the United States? Well, you know, Karen, it can only mean one thing. And that is that the United States claims the right to tax its non-resident citizens who live in other countries, right?
And to tax them on the income they earn in those countries where they live.
Isn't that unreal? So, you know, let's take the situation of a U.S. citizen living in, say, how about Australia, where you are? So we have a U.S. citizen who lives in Australia, tax-paying resident, probably citizen of Australia. Only income they ever learn in the world is in Australia. And guess what? The U.S. says we can tax that, right? So
that's right. So, but I mean, not only can we tax that, we can apply our own rules and our own accounting period and our own currency and everything else to calculate your tax liability.
Yeah. Would you say there's a general principle that the U.S. actually taxes its non-resident citizens more punitively than its resident citizens?
Certainly. Certainly. But that comes down to all the different, basically, the U.S. tax code is xenophobic.
Hates everything foreign.
It hates everything foreign. Yeah. So if you've got a bank account that's foreign, you have to report it. If you've got a business that's foreign, there's extra reporting forms. If you've got a investment that's foreign, there's extra reporting forms. And depending on what that investment is, there might even be punitive taxes on that.
Absolutely.
So, and the problem is you get somebody who's been living in Australia for 20 or 30 years and they go, foreign? Well, something in the U.S. is foreign, but no. According to the US tax code, something in Australia, right where you live, is foreign if you're a US citizen.
That's right. That's right. And of course, a big part of this is being tied to the US dollar. But in any case, so would you agree with me that what citizenship taxation really is the US taxation of people who don't live in the United States on income that is not sourced in the United States? Would you agree with that?
Exactly,
All right.
exactly.
So I would note, and you would agree, presumably, that that is the precise opposite of what most people imagine it to be, right?
Well, they just think it's patriotic and you're paying your fair share. But who's to determine what's fair and why do you owe anything to a country where you don't live?
Oh, I wanted to ask you, Karen. I heard that Australia ta has taxes too. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Oh my
Very
goodness.
high taxes.
So in other words, the US is saying, well, we're going to tax these people in Australia who live in Australia, even though Australia taxes them. Is that right?
Yes, but the US does offer you a credit for the taxes paid to Australia.
In all cases?
Well, in all cases that you pay tax income taxes to Australia. So if the taxes are paid other than income tax, or if Australia is trying to incentivize some sort of the behavior and doesn't charge taxes on them.
Really, I heard that there were some Australian income taxes that the US wouldn't offer credits for, like the net investment income tax and stuff. Isn't that right?
That's the US income tax that that does not allow any foreign tax credits against it at all.
Okay, well that's a problem then, isn't it? Well, anyway,
That's the
okay.
problem.
So I think that's what citizenship taxation really is. So it really shouldn't be called citizenship taxation, should it? It should be called the US right to tax people who don't live in the United States on income not earned in the United States. Would that be a better description?
Yeah, let's talk, call it extraterritorial taxation.
By the way, should extraterritorial taxation be stopped?
Absolutely.
So, on that note, I would recommend that listeners go to seatnow.org, SEATNOW.org. And check out some other podcasts and things that we've written there. But anyway, all right, so we know what citizenship taxation is.
Yeah, and so what that creates is a dual tax residency.
All right, now let's pause and talk about that for a minute, right? So tax residency, Karen, you want to give a brief description of what tax residency means before we go further?
So generally, and look, every country is a little bit different, but generally, if you're a resident of a country, you're taxable on your worldwide income. So income sourced inside the country and so income sourced outside the country. So generally, a tax resident is taxable on worldwide income, while a non-resident is taxable only on income sourced within the country.
Yeah, or to
So
put it another way, a tax resident is subject to full-on taxation according to the country's tax rules, right?
Right.
And if you're not a tax resident, then you're likely going to be taxed on the source income source in the country, right?
Right.
All right. So this U.S. Notion, right, of defining tax residency, making citizens tax residents, right? Really means that any time, and this is interesting, any time a U.S. citizen finds himself, wakes up living as a tax resident of another country, they're automatically a dual tax resident, aren't they?
That's right. They're treated as a tax resident of the US as well as a tax resident where they're actually living.
Do you think that most people would think that being a dual tax resident would be exciting?
A dual tax resident is a real pain because you're trying to serve two masters at once. Right? You've got the tax rules of two different countries that you have to comply with. That means you have to com have You have compliance obligations in both countries. You're being taxed by both countries, which is often mitigated by tax credits, but it's a real problem when the two countries measure the what's taxable differently. Either they measure it, they're misaligned by timing. One sees a taxable event event earlier than the other or later than the other. And then they're not aligned, and you end up paying tax in both places often. Okay, or you might have differences in what is taxable. So the government of Australia might like to incentivize certain things. They might want to provide tax relief to parents with who send their kids to childcare, or something like that. And that tax relief is being offered by the Australian government, but a US citizen living in Australia will not get that benefit when they're calculating their US taxes.
Right,
So
or maybe put an Australian resident and citizen who happens to have been born in the US will be denied that benefit because the US claims them as a citizen, right?
right. And so they'll have to pay US tax on their income without taking that benefit into account.
Right. So, in other words, what this really is, I've heard some people say, is this dual tax residency stuff. If it's US dual residency, and we'll get to that in a minute. Not only does it involve double taxation in some circumstances, but the real problem is the opportunity cost because it denies people the benefits of tax advantage savings plans in their country of residence, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, that's kind of interesting. But I mean, surely US citizens are not the only people in the world who might find themselves in a position of dual tax residency, right?
That's right. It's reasonably common to have some sort of dual residency when you're in the process of moving, because you move from one place to another, and in that year of transition, both places may try and claim you.
Yeah, or I
Or
mean,
you may be spending half your time in one country and half in the other.
sure, you're domiciled in one country, but you spend more than 183 days in another, right? So, I mean,
Right.
this is not, although it's certainly a minority of people, a small percentage, it's not uncommon. Now, if you're not part a U.S. citizen, and if you're not a country that's a party to a U.S. tax treaty, then isn't it the case that the normal sort of OECD types of treaties have rules that say, well, dual tax residency is a bad thing. So by treaty, we're going to allow people to, we're going to assign the tax residency to one country or another country.
Yeah, they have tiebreaker rules in the treaties.
Can you explain how that works? And, just a very
So
brief.
it's got a series of criteria that they look at.
Okay, so let's make up
Like,
an example
where
here.
they spend their time, where they have a home, where their family is, etc. And you work your way through the various criteria to say which country you have a closer economic tie to than the other.
Okay, so let's just to make up a very simple example, let's say that somebody's a tax resident of both Canada and say the UK. Then say step one, all right. Well, bad news. The bad news is that, oh my God, you're a tax resident of Canada and the UK. But the good news is that we have a treaty where we're going to let you be a tax resident of only one of the countries. And so you go through the circumstances that are really designed to see, where's your life really centered, starting with permanent home. Then moving on to center of vital interest. But you know what I've always found interesting, Karen, is that let's say you still haven't figured it out, permanent home in both countries, vital interest in two countries, habitual abode in two countries. You know what they look to then to decide nationality or
Citizenship, it's like the
citizenship?
last thing on the list.
So can I ask you something here? How is it that, okay, nationality, citizenship, that is clearly internationally agreed to be the least important consideration in determining where somebody should be tax resident. How is it the United States uses that as the primary determinant of tax residency? Can you help me with that?
No, I can't help you with that.
I mean, don't you find that very odd?
I do.
So, what about these US t so, I mean, that's how these, in the normal world. And this, by the way, is why when you look at the CRS, right, These tiebreaker rules are also used to determine whether somebody's actually a resident. But let's go to the U.S. treaty. What is it about U.S. tax treaty? So we have the same dual residency problem because U.S. citizens are always tax residents. So all U.S. tax treaties have something called a saving clause.
That's
That
right.
really is the culprit here, right?
That's right. Yeah. Because it basically says that if you're a U.S. citizen, you can't use that tiebreaker.
Yeah,
In
so
fact,
here,
you can't have benefit of most of the treaty. We're going to tell you exactly which little bits of the treaty you can use.
now let's break this down a little because I think it's important for people to understand. So the example I'm going to use today is the U.S.-Canada Treaty. And I'm going to read this and we can comment on it as I read it, okay? So now, in Article 4 of the treaty, what's interesting is that it has the standard tiebreaker rules. We start off like everywhere else, resident of both contracting states. They go through the same stuff. You're deemed
Exactly.
to be a permanent home, center of vital interest, habitual abode, and then finally citizenship, right?
Right.
Same tiebreaker, but.
Which is kind of silly because, the whole thing, this is the US Canada treaty, right? And it says if you're a citizen of both states, well, if you're a citizen of both states, you're a resident of. You're not even getting into here.
Well, if you're, well, remember, Canada doesn't tax based on citizenship. But
No, but I'm
here's
saying
what.
if you're a citizen of both Canada and the US living in Canada, you're not
That
even going to be able
doesn't
to
count,
use this.
right? Yeah. Well, here's though, here's what these U.S. tax treaties have that, treaties with other countries don't have. And this is the saving clause. And I want to go through this with you, Karen. Because this is what makes all the difference. Except as provided in paragraph three, these are carve-outs to the saving clause that I'm about to read. Nothing in this convention shall be construed as preventing a contracting state from taxing its residents. Now, that's as determined under Article 4 that I just read to you. Listen to this. Are you ready for this? You're sitting down, right?
I'm sitting down, yes.
Good. And in the case of the United States, look, here comes a benefit for the United States. In the case its citizens, then it goes on about how they can even tax them after they cease to be citizens, but let's not complicate it, right? So except as provided in paragraph three, these are some carve-outs. Not this treaty cannot be construed as preventing a contracting state from taxing its residents under normal treaty tiebreak rules, but in the case of the United States, its citizens. So, Karen.
And then it goes as if there were no convention or treaty between the United States and Canada with respect to taxes on income and capital.
So let's look at this. First of all, that means that a U.S. citizen can never use the treaty tiebreak if they're living in another country in a dual
The
tax.
only way they could do that is if the treaty tiebreak was stuck in paragraph three. Which it's not.
And we'll come back to that in a minute. But as it stands right now, the key point is the saving clause says, under no circumstances can somebody, because they're a U.S. citizen, ever cease under the treaty to be a tax resident of the United States. It's not allowed. Agreed?
Right.
I guess you don't leave the land of the free too easily, do you?
No.
Now, going back to what we agreed on earlier, that what citizenship taxation really is, taxing its citizens, is really the United States taxing the residents of other countries, right? And
Right.
that's the only meaning it can really have.
Yeah. So basically, by agreeing to this treaty, Canada is saying, hey, US, come on in, tax our residents on their Canadian income. No problem.
And according to U.S. tax rules, right?
According to US tax rules.
And the more forms and penalties, the better, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't matter.
We support. the right of the United States under this treaty to impose U.S. tax rules on our Canadian residents. That's what they're saying, right?
That's absolutely what they're saying.
Karen, let me ask you something. How could any country be so stupid as to sign something like this?
I don't think they understood what they were signing. Number one, I think that a lot of this has happened in the middle of the 20th century when tax treaties started to become common. And at that point, the US tax code was not nearly as xenophobic as it ha is now. And the US citizenship law wasn't as sticky as it is now either. People lost US citizenship quite easily, back in the 50s and 60s, right?
Oh, absolutely. And this comes back, and we've discussed this a lot, is the Euphorium decision, right? The 1967 Euphorium decision.
Right. So all of the treaties had been put into place before that, where the people who were still US citizens after becoming Canadian citizens and living in Canada for 30 years were few and far between. And it was like a theoretical problem at that point. Whereas you move forward to today, where US citizenship is hard and expensive to get rid of. So if once a US citizen, you've got to basically pay, it's still 2350, isn't
It's
it?
still 2350. Yeah, well, I mean that, yeah, it's still,
Yeah.
well, that's not even the problem. The
No,
people
yeah.
who are out by
And you've
paying
got to go through the whole
2350 are
exit
left.
tax regime and all of that to get out of being a US tax resident. So it's not for the faint-hearted to go through that. So that's number one problem, that it's hard to get rid of US citizenship now. And number two problem is that the US tax code has become more and more xenophobic over time. So you look in the 60s, they added the controlled foreign corporation laws. In the 80s, they added the passive foreign investment company laws. In 2017, they did the transition tax and GILTI.
All of which is driven by enforcement and awareness by FATCA.
Yeah.
Passed in 2010, rolled out in 2014. But key point here, right? I mean, we know all this to be true, right? So key first point is that citizenship taxation means U.S. gets to tax the residents of other countries, right? And if this is
On the income generated in that country.
On income generated in that country. And this is what a country agrees to in a treaty, right?
Right.
Okay, so in other words, U.S. citizenship, a U.S. citizen who moves to another country, lives in another country, is automatically a dual tax resident, number one.
Right.
Number two, because of the saving clause in the treaty, they're unable to cease to be a dual tax resident the way the citizens of all other countries can under those treaties,
Right.
right? Okay, and this of course leads to all the problems for both the individual and the country. Okay, so in other words, put another way, they do not get the benefit. U.S. citizens do not get the benefits of the dual citizen tiebreaker. Now, this other point that I want to make here that I always found interesting, right? So when we look at the saving clause, we know that U.S. citizens don't get the benefit of it. But you know what's really interesting? Green card holders do.
That's right.
Right? Because if we look at that again, we look at it again, it says here, nothing is going to be construed as preventing a contractor from taxing its residents as determined under Article 4 residents, right?
Right.
Okay, and in the case of the citizens. Now, again, what's fascinating about talking about the citizen thing, right, is that under the treaty tiebreak rules, nationality or citizenship is the least important criterion, right?
That's right.
But what's
That's right.
also fascinating here is that under U.S. immigration law, green card holders are supposed to be intending to live permanently in the United States and living in the United States. Agreed?
Right. Yeah,
In
well, isn't
the
that a
same government's
condition of
name,
their
are they
green card?
allowed to tiebreak out under the treaty when citizens who may never have lived in the United States are not.
Right.
Do you think that U.S. citizenship is the citizenship of free people?
Oh, I think that it puts an awful lot of restrictions on you, yeah.
All right, so this is really, really fascinating. And so I think that the part of the conclusion that we come from that we get to here is that these treaties are always, they recite, they are to avoid double taxation, et cetera, et cetera. But it's pretty clear that the saving clause, that the combination of US citizenship automatically creating dual tax residency, the saving clause preventing US citizens from avoiding a US tax residency really means, and incongruities in laws really means the effect of the saving clause is to facilitate double taxation. Would that be right?
Yeah, that would be right.
So how come these treaties say that they're to prevent double taxation when they're really to facilitate it?
Well, to facilitate it for one small group, U.S. citizens.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. It's funny because this is not, I don't ever see this discussed this way in the tax world, do you?
Yeah, no, I haven't heard of anyone else bringing that point out that
I mean, this
this
is really important stuff, right? So
yeah, the savings clause is the real problem there, isn't it?
I think it absolutely is the real problem. I think it is the real problem. I read an article recently about somebody suggesting maybe the UK should move to citizenship taxation, or occasionally you see some idiot parliamentarian in Canada say Canada should move to citizenship taxation. But what's fascinating is that without a saving clause, right, the normal treaties allow for treaty tiebreak rules, essentially muting the problem of citizenship taxation, right?
Right.
But because of the US style treaty with a saving clause, it actually facilitates it. And then, we add the point that you make, the American hatred of all things foreign. So what they then do is they impose a bunch of extra rules, PFIC, CFC rules, foreign trust rules, et cetera, to guarantee that it can be used to actually siphon productive capital out of other countries. And the treaty partner country actually agrees to this. Can you believe this?
That's right. That's right.
So
Yeah.
let's say that somebody came to you. Let's say Janet Yellen came to you, Karen, and said, "Karen, you're in Australia, but your reputation's international. It's made it all the way to my desk in Washington, D.C."
Right. Not likely.
Well, who else would they go to? Of course, we want to end U.S. citizen. We want to end the ability, the fact that our U.S. tax treaty facilitate double taxation, Karen. What would you suggest as an amendment to the treaty that might solve this problem so that US citizens could be treated like other citizens?
You take out the reference to citizenship in that savings clause.
I think that's right. You get rid of the part and can tax its citizens.
Yep.
Absolutely. Or I suppose what you could do is add the tiebreak provision to the list of exclusions, right? That might work too.
Right. That
Because that
might work.
would mean that the US would cease to lose the right to tax its citizens under the treaty if somebody were a tax resident of the treaty partner country. Agreed?
Right.
So there are two
Yeah.
ways of doing this. Oh my God, this has been such a great talk. What would you like to add here?
I just add that you should always be able to find some way to get rid of dual tax residency, and the fact that the US does not allow its citizens to do that is a violation of the rights of those citizens, and other countries should stick up for their own citizens and residents who are afflicted by this problem.
I think that's absolutely right. And hopefully over time, do you think that these countries will actually, at what point will they begin to understand what these tax treaties actually mean?
Yeah, I don't know what it'll take for them to understand that.
Well, it's amazing stuff. Anyway, this is really fascinating because although citizenship taxation is probably because it's based on, it's really based on circumstances of birth rather than circumstances of life, right?
Right.
People didn't choose where they were born, okay, et cetera. I mean, it is certainly vile, 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 right? But interestingly, it is not the biggest problem here. The biggest problem is the tax treaties, the saving clause that prevents these US citizens from being able to tie break their residency to the country where they actually live. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I'd say that's accurate. If we had this, if we had the savings clause, or we had if we had the ability to use the tiebreak clause as a citizen, that would make all the difference.
It certainly wouldn't. Don't you think it's absolutely outrageous that green card holders who are supposed to be living in the United States can use the tiebreak provision and not be taxed as US and citizens can have never lived there cannot?
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Incredible stuff, isn't it?
It is.
All right, Karen. Well, this has been great. Thanks so much for this conversation today. And
And
Karen
thank you,
and I
John.
are both members of SEET. So I should close by asking Karen, I mean, as bad as the saving clause is, don't you think it would be better if the United States were to end would cease taxing based on citizenship?
That's right. We should stop extraterritorial taxation.
Now, and on that note, please visit SEAT now, SEATnow.org for further information. Thanks very much, Karen.
Thanks, John.